This episode of Gunblog Varietycast brought to you by LawOfSelfDefense.com. Go to LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety to learn about your state's self-defense laws. Sign up for one of their online or in-person seminars or buy the book Law of Self-Defense and get 10% off when you use the discount code VARIETY at checkout. That's LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety.
Welcome to another episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast with your hosts, Sean Sorrentino and Aaron Paulette.
Welcome to episode 104 of the Gunblog Variety Cast. How are you doing, Aaron?
Well, allergies are kicking my butt as per usual, but some good news, completely unrelated to allergies, is that my lawyer in California, and let me just say how cool it is that I can actually say, oh, I have legal staff now, but my lawyer in California has filed the paperwork to turn Operation Blazing Sword into a charity. So we have filed with the state. Now I'm just waiting to get an email back from them, which I will then give to him, and then he can file on the national level. So we're making progress. It's not as fast as I would like, because honestly, I would have preferred to have been in operation, end of June, beginning of July, but these things take time. But things are moving, so hopefully by the end of the summer, we will be in full operation. So how are you doing, Sean?
I am doing great. I'm almost at the end of my week. I'm recording the podcast, which is my favorite time of the week. Editing, not my favorite time of the week, but the recording part I always have a good time with. And I understand that you are now recording using all of the equipment that has been purchased, including you were running Skype through a cell phone in exactly the way you would use it in order to record phone calls.
Yes, I do. Instead of having to use a big clunky laptop, I've now plugged into my iPhone, which is running Skype, and I've got you in front of me so I can see you as you move and
make jape faces
for the camera. Yeah, moose antlers back to you. And I've got a wireless mouse, and I've got a Bluetooth keyboard, and I'm feeling very high-tech here.
Living in the future.
Yes, I have multiple elf boxes here, and it's cool.
So, got chased by a dog again while I was riding my bike.
I assume the dog didn't catch you, because bicycle?
No. Well, you'd be surprised how easy it is for a dog to get you if they get the jump on you and they're not just chasing you from behind. This dog, however, not a lot of experience in chasing people on bicycles. So he chased me from behind, around his own fence, out the little gate in his fence in his front yard, into the middle of the street, and then chased me down the street. The biggest problem was not that he was going to catch me. The biggest problem is that I had a choice, let him catch me or go through the T-intersection stop sign at the bottom of the hill. Yeah, so I just kept ahead of him. Looked left and looked right, saw that there's really very few people that come through that intersection, but, you know, all you need is one. And I watched, I made sure that I was good, and I went through the intersection, made the left-hand turn, and I looked back, and the dog's like, okay, I'm giving it up now. So I went back to the house, because I always go back, and I say, look, this is the situation. They probably don't know what's going on, and if they do know what's going on, somebody saying, hey, please don't do this, is a whole lot better than, hey, here's your summons to court, you know? Oh, here's your dog getting seized. If you can just say something to people and say, hey, look, neighbor, why don't we handle this in a neighborly way? You don't let your dog do that, and everything will be cool. And so they're going to do that. They're going to chain the dog up and keep the dog from running after me. Of course, you know, what was a gigantic dog chasing me turned out to be about 40 pounds of border collie.
Did it make you pedal faster?
No, actually, I was pretty sure that he couldn't catch me. So I pedaled just fast enough to keep ahead of him.
And just to confirm, this wasn't one of the troublemaking dogs from earlier.
No, I haven't seen those dogs. In all this time, I haven't seen them. I heard them bark, but I have not laid eyes on these dogs since. So Johnston County, good job.
Yeah.
Well, let's get on with the rest of the show. This week in Pacifiers and Peacemakers, Beth Alcazar talks with Beth Vaughn about why women should be involved in the firearms industry.
Hey everybody, I am actually back up here in the beautiful Wisconsin helping out the USCCA team with some awesome photo shoots and videos coming up. But I also have the opportunity to spend some time with a good friend and fellow coworker who is also named Beth. Beth, tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is that you currently do, and we're going to get into some nitty-gritty about why we think it's really important for females to be involved with the firearms industry.
Well, thanks, Beth. It's really fun to be here and kind of have this conversation. I know it's a passion of both of ours. So I come from law enforcement. I was a correctional officer for about a year and a half, and now I work for the USCCA, and as you said, fellow instructor and training counselor.
Well, and I think you and I kind of got into a conversation earlier, and I thought it was really important to share with others. The fact that women are getting involved with the firearms industry and with concealed carry and with just training in general is awesome. But I think it's also very important that women know that there are other ladies out there who are trainers, who are training counselors, and who can walk them through the process. Tell me a little bit about your experience with that and why it's so important that we have women in charge.
Absolutely. For me, I could walk the hallways of a jail armed with nothing but my mouth and my hands. I could walk rapists and murderers down the hallways by myself, and I didn't have a fear in the world because I was confident in my training. But the most intimidating part for me was sitting in a firearms course or even hunter safety, being surrounded by men, and not that they did anything in particular, but just the environment of being afraid to ask a question, being the blonde in the back. I was so intimidated in that setting, and I really want other women to realize that it's not a man's world anymore. We can do it too, and there are other people out there to help. If you're not comfortable with a male instructor, there's plenty of females raring and willing to help out.
And it's so weird how that phenomenon happens, because it happens to all of us, I think, in some way, shape, or form. As females, we bond with one another, we relate with one another so much easier. And you walk into this classroom full of guys, and it's like they have this attitude that everyone knows what they're doing, and everyone understands the terminology, and it's very easy to get singled out and to feel like, oh gosh, even from walking in the room, you feel like you're out. Like, oh no, I can't do this. And that's an unfair assessment, I think, for any woman. If you're going to walk into a classroom and it's full of guys, don't let that be the deciding factor. As Beth mentioned, yeah, there's going to be a lot of ladies out there who are training nowadays. Beth, do you see a lot more people coming through the USCCA courses now that are female?
Absolutely. I've seen just, I'm going to call it a mini explosion of females gaining memberships to the USCCA, wanting to take courses, ordering products and books, videos, anything they can get their hands on to really get that upper hand before taking a course. So it's really exciting to see that. And I also like to think of, too, if I were to walk onto a car lot and have a male salesman come up to me, if he's really driven on commission, I've had that experience, and I don't know if you've had that before,
oh, yeah.
That he thinks, I'm going to get a leg up, I'm going to make a couple extra bucks, and I've got this one in the bag. So it's not just firearms, it's the whole mentality of it being a quote-unquote man's world, and that's definitely changing.
And of course, I don't think either one of us would ever say that guys can't teach girls.
Oh my gosh.
That's not exactly what we're going for here. But I think especially when it comes to females who are new, or maybe females who have had bad experiences even with what they've learned from the media, or maybe something, a tragedy or something that happened in their family or within their circle of friends, they carry those things into the classroom. And I think having a woman instructor oftentimes is like the changing point or the turning point where a woman goes, oh my gosh, if she can do it, I can do it too. Do you feel that way?
Absolutely. And I mean, too, there are some women that have no problem taking instruction from a male instructor, and that's great. But for some of those, like for me especially, I would have taken so many more courses, take more classes, spend more time on the range, in a gun store, had there been a friendly female face there, just to take some of the fear away from even asking a question that may be, oh my gosh, you must know kind of situation.
With a group of women versus a group of men, obviously the dynamics are very, very different. But luckily nowadays, we're seeing a lot more women engaged in a classroom. It's perfectly fine to have a classroom with a mix of people, and it's certainly awesome to have both male and female instructors. But Beth and I think, are both living proof that you can do this. I mean, I'm a mom with a gun who has just taken as many classes as I possibly could so that I could be more informed and think like a woman so that I could teach better to a woman. And I know that Beth also has that same goal in mind and has a very powerful background and a powerful story that kind of fuels her fire even more. But what are some of your goals, I guess, with training from this point on?
I guess the biggest goal for me is just getting the word out there and getting more females involved. I hope I can use my experiences and life experiences and training experiences to help encourage other females, to give them that if you can do it, I can too kind of mentality, and that my passion for helping others will really spark interest and just get more people involved.
And I think we're seeing a lot of that, and I think we're super excited about that, especially at the USCCA. So for all those out there who are listening, if you are a female, go for it. Take a class. Look for a female instructor in your area if that's what you're most comfortable with, or grab a friend or your mom, sister, daughter, take her with you and enjoy the experience together. And beyond that, how about take a class, be an instructor, or even be a training counselor, whether it's with the NRA, whether it's with the Well-Armed Woman, whether it's with something like a Front Sight or a Sig Sauer or the USCCA. There are plenty of opportunities out there, and I think the both of us can attest to it. It's worth it.
Absolutely.
That's all I've got for this time, guys. Until next time, stay safe and be well armed.
You can read more from Beth at usconcealedcarry.com/blog and click on Pacifiers and Peacemakers in the left sidebar.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the Donate or Subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly. A little help from you is a big help to us.
Felons behaving badly. Distraught man shot and wounded by Greensboro officers.
That's terrible.
I know. This is one of those times where Adam could do this or I could do this, because this is totally fun with headlines. Dateline, Greensboro, North Carolina. A North Carolina man who was upset after learning of a relative's death was shot and wounded by officers after he pointed a gun at them.
Well, imagine that.
Greensboro Police spokeswoman Susan Danielson said officers responded to an apartment early Monday morning after someone called and said that 27-year-old suspect had put a gun to the caller's head.
Okay, so this guy is grieving and he puts a gun to someone else's head and then he points it at the cops.
Danielson said suspect confronted the three white police officers who responded. Suspect is black and was in stable condition after being shot in the shoulder and hip.
So why is the race really relevant here? I mean, he pointed a gun at a cop, regardless of what race he is, regardless of what race the police officers are. You point a gun at a cop, you're going to get shot.
Danielson said officers worked about 10 minutes to convince suspect to drop the gun when he pointed it at them and they fired.
Play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
No one else was hurt.
Thankfully.
The officers have been suspended while the department's Professional Standards Division investigates. The officers' names have not been released.
And from what I understand of these things, it's pretty much standard procedure whenever there's an officer-involved shooting like this to suspend them with pay while the investigation goes on. And then if they're cleared, they're returned to duty. And if charges have to be brought, then they're suspended without pay.
Exactly. And what happens in this case, actually, in all officer-involved shootings in North Carolina, is the State Bureau of Investigation takes over. So this poor distraught man, whose mother had just died, according to another story, pointed a gun at a person who then he forced to call 911, and then pointed the gun at the police. And it is distraught man shot and wounded by Greensboro officers.
Is this an attempt at suicide by cop that just didn't go all the way through?
It strikes me more as an attempt at, let's turn something that isn't a racial incident into a racial incident. I mean, like, seriously, how do you not see? This is exactly what you get when you do this.
I ask because you said he forced the person at gunpoint to call 911, which was unusual. Usually if you have a gun to someone's head, you don't want the police called, so I have to wonder what this guy's game was. You know, oh gee, my mom died. I'm in such grief. I'm going to force you at threat of death to call the police, who I'm then going to try and shoot. That's why I thought suicide by cop. It's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Right, because you know that the caller didn't just say, well, the heck with you. I know you've got a gun pointed at my head, but I'm dialing 911 anyway. No, don't call 911. Yes, I'm calling 911. Stop or I'll pour milk on your head. No.
Yeah.
He pretty much forced him to call 911. I mean, pretty much that's what happened. So, yeah, it sounds very much like that. So, what sort of person do you think points a gun at somebody's head, makes them call 911, and then, after 10 minutes of the cops trying to talk him down, points a gun at them?
I'm sure someone who was studying to be Pope.
Pretty much. Assault on an officer, state employee, misdemeanor, class A1. 2 counts, common law robbery, felon, class G. 2 counts of possession of a firearm by a felon, felon, class G. Assault with a deadly weapon, inflicting serious injury, felon, class E. And robbery with a dangerous weapon attempted, felon, class D.
Yep, definitely trying to get into the papacy. Wow.
Baron is still on assignment and will return next week.
So, Sean, Baron's been gone on assignment for 2 weeks. Is everything okay with him or what?
Yeah, he's doing fine. You know that he said he was starting this new job. When he came back, he had just started the new job.
Uh-huh.
Well, it is one of those things that it's cyclical, and he has a lot of work right now. It's some project that he's dealing with, and he's been working huge hours. And as soon as he's done with all these hours, he runs straight home to spend some quality time with his son and, of course, his wife. So we can hardly hold it against him that he's trying to get paid and take care of his family.
Yeah, that's cool. I just wanted to make sure he was all right.
Oh, yeah. He's doing fine, aside from having to work a lot of hours. But you know Baron, he wasn't going to take a job he didn't like.
Yep. And the good side of working all these hours is you get paid really well.
I imagine that given the level of knowledge that Baron has, they're paying him pretty well.
Yeah.
I couldn't afford the man. And we're getting all his tech tips for free.
Yep.
So our main topic segment, warning shots. So Aaron, when are warning shots a good idea?
I know the accepted answer is never.
I once heard Michael Bain say that shooting a warning shot at, you know, an animal in the effort of making a lot of noise and making the animal move away from you was an acceptable warning shot. You know, you're in the forest and you're careful about what you do. Rather than actually have to kill an animal, you know, the animal's not necessarily trying to hurt you. And if you make a lot of noise, there's a good possibility they'll go away.
Yeah, that's sort of where I was coming from. If I am ever attacked by a dog, I mean, obviously if it's a rabbit, I'm going to have to shoot it. But if it's just being overly aggressive, I would really prefer not to have to kill it, especially if it's at close range. So I was thinking that a shot into the ground, just the noise would frighten it off.
That really depends on where you are. You know, you're pretty much going to have to take the hit if you're in a residential neighborhood. You can't just pop off around. And that was the reason that it wasn't leaning on a gun as my defense for those two dogs that were attacking me and Dices down at the end of the street.
Yeah.
You just can't do that.
But since we're talking about warning shots against people, yeah, those are a bad idea. If you need to draw your gun and shoot, you had better shoot center mass, because otherwise an attorney can just make hay out of the fact that, well, you could have shot to kill and you didn't. You did the warning shot. It's a mess.
Well, there was an interesting incident on Sunday morning here in Raleigh. A homeowner called 911 and, well, just listen.
No, I'm with him.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
It's Kimberly Green. We've got a bunch of hoodlums out here racing. I am off the load and I'm going outside to secure the neighborhood. You need to send TV as quickly as possible.
I'm sorry, you're going out to do what the neighborhood, sir?
I'm going to secure my neighborhood. I have a neighborhood in lunch. I'm going to have the neighbors with me. There's hoodlums out here racing up and down the street. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. They're shouting vandalism. They have firearms, and we're going to screw our neighborhood. If I were you, I'd send PD as quickly.
Okay, sir. Can you tell me what single leaf runs off of?
It's single leaf lane in Raleigh, North Carolina.
But sir, can you give me numerics on single leaf or an intersection?
Negative, ma'am. It's on single leaf, Raleigh, North Carolina. PD, no worse than that. Thank you.
Now, was that distorted to disguise their identities, or is that just how they sound? Because that was really weird.
North Carolina law requires that voices have to be altered in some way.
Okay.
So, yes, I believe that was distorted.
So the reason I ask about the distortion is, did he actually start off the call saying, I'm going to kill him?
I don't believe so. I listened to it a couple of times fairly carefully, and what I heard was, I'm going to tell him. He was talking to somebody not on the phone, so he was talking to presumably his wife, saying, I'm going to tell him, to tell the cops to come. I'm going to tell him what's going on.
Okay, good.
What did you think about, I'm locked and loaded, I'm going to go secure my neighborhood?
Yeah, he's going to have problems with that later.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is North Carolina, right? Isn't there something in your code about going armed to the terror?
Trust me, that's the least of his worries. That's a misdemeanor.
Okay, well, yeah, it really does sound like, from what I could make out from the call, that there are some troublemakers outside and that he's armed and maybe some other members of the neighborhood watch are also armed and they're going out to confront them. And just based on context, it really sounded like he was saying, y'all better get the police out here to clean up the spent brass casings and take away the bodies.
Yeah, that's kind of what it sounds like to me. So, a shot rings out, and 911 gets another phone call.
Hello, yes.
Yeah, sir, can you tell me exactly what happened?
Yes, ma'am. We have our house is, we have a lot of people outside of our house yelling and shouting profanity. I yelled at them, please leave the premises. They were showing a firearm, so I fired a warning shot, and we got somebody that got hit.
Okay, so somebody was shot?
Well, I don't know if they're shot or not, ma'am. I fired my warning shot like I'm supposed to by law, and okay. We got people. They do have firearms, and I'm trying to protect myself and my family.
Who wanted to come to your house?
Ma'am, I don't know who they are. There's a park right down the road.
Did they just show up at your house? I'm gonna send them over there, sir, but I need to know what's going on.
Blackmail outside my freaking house, firearms. Please send PD.
Okay, sir, is anyone shot?
Warning shot?
Yes, he did say warning shot.
I fired my warning shot like I'm supposed to by law.
Is that actually law?
It's not any law I've ever heard of.
I didn't know either. And then what kind of warning shot actually hits somebody? Because then that's no longer even a warning shot. It's poor marksmanship for one. But what kind of trouble is he in when he fires a warning shot that he's not supposed to and hits the person that he's not aiming at? That sounds pretty criminal, actually. At the very least, it's negligent.
Well, yep. The suspect is under arrest and being held at Wake County Detention Facility on a first-degree murder charge with no bond.
Okay.
First-degree murder in this state, you get two choices at the end of your trial. Life in prison, no possibility of parole, or death. There's your only two choices. Let's leave this particular incident to the side because obviously we only know what the media is telling us about it, but let's talk about warning shots.
Yeah.
So we've already established that in most cases, warning shots are a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
This illustrates one of the problems. People can get hurt who you didn't intend to hurt.
Yeah, I think if he had shot the guy who was allegedly brandishing the gun, that would have been a lot more defensible.
Assuming there was, in fact, a gun.
Yeah, that's why I said allegedly, but yeah.
Yeah. I think you alluded to this earlier. Maybe you can explain it a little better to me, but how can a warning shot end up messing up your self-defense case?
Well, as I was taught, you only draw your gun and shoot either in defense of your life or defense of another, and you have to believe that harm is imminent. So if you have the time to fire a warning shot, then a lawyer can say, well, you really weren't in danger, were you? Because you had the time to fire a warning shot, so maybe this person really wasn't going to hurt you. And it can really damage your case.
I am not, obviously not a lawyer. I would not use a warning shot if I had any other option. But I have never really thought that this was the greatest legal attack on self-defense ever. Because if they're saying, oh, you fired a warning shot, they have to necessarily allow the idea that it was a self-defense incident in the first place. So that means you have the ability to argue self-defense. So unless they're using it in the initial phase of the trial in order to get the judge to rule out you being able to say self-defense, which if you take Andrew Branca's class, he'll explain to you the whole idea of the judge can make it impossible for you to even raise the idea of self-defense in court if you don't meet the right elements. But if they have to argue that in court, in front of a jury, your lawyer is just going to say, look, he had the right under our law of self-defense to shoot the guy. Are we really going to punish him for not actually killing the man?
That is an excellent point, and that's one of the reasons why Florida last year, I think it was last year, might have been 2014, passed a law that made warning shots not criminal.
I think it just basically said what the rest of us think. If shooting into the ground stops an incident, that's the least amount of harm. Wouldn't you rather not punish people using the least amount of harm instead of the most amount of harm? Now, as I said, as you said, as we both agree, probably not the best plan. You might hurt somebody. You might have some negative effects. You might end up putting a bullet in somebody's house. There's any number of things, especially if you shoot it up in the air. What goes up must come down.
Oh, geez. Yeah, don't shoot up in the air. No.
But seriously, do you really want to punish somebody for not killing someone? Because that's what that argument sounds like. But here's the thing. Warning shots are not actually illegal.
Well, I know that they're not illegal in Florida, but you're saying that they're not illegal in North Carolina, too.
They're not really illegal anywhere. Because if you have the right to shoot somebody and kill them in self-defense, then you're pretty much able to do anything you need to up to that point. Now, you can't napalm the whole town in order to save your own life. That would hurt people that aren't hurting you. But if you can kill somebody in order to defend your own life, you can do anything up to that point to defend your own life. If self-defense covers killing another human being, it certainly covers making a whole lot of noise and putting a bullet into the ground.
Yeah, that's certainly true, but I know enough police officers who would, you know, read the statutes and say, well, you didn't shoot in self-defense being you neutralized the target. So what you did then was you fired a gun within city limits, and that's not permitted.
Yeah, but that's another one that falls under the same problem. If it's okay to kill somebody, then it's okay to violate a much, much smaller ordinance.
Well, that's absolutely true, but as has been said many times, you may beat the rap, but you can't beat the ride.
You're not going to beat the ride anyway. It doesn't matter what you do. You're going to go in handcuffs. You're going to end up in jail. And this is why I keep telling people, take the law of self-defense class. Understand what your duties are. Understand what your responsibilities are. Understand what the law actually says, and then craft your self-defense strategy, as Andrew says, around what the law says you can do. Because if you don't end up in the position in the first place, it makes it a whole lot easier for your lawyer to get you out of what does happen, right? If you don't do anything stupid, you make it a whole lot easier on your lawyer.
Absolutely.
So we both agree shooting a warning shot is a bad idea. And we obviously agree that shooting a warning shot, killing somebody, and then calling 911 and saying, well, I shot a warning shot as I'm allowed by law or required to by law. I can't remember exactly what
he said. Yeah, I think he said required by law.
Required by law. You just look like you don't know what you're talking about. So there's a case, should have taken the class, should have learned the law, because if you know the law, then you're less likely to do stupid things.
So speaking of the law of self-defense, and now a word from our sponsor.
You know what will happen. If you ever have to defend yourself, you're going to end up in handcuffs. Are you trained to win the fight after the fight? Sure, you can draw, aim, and put two in the ten ring, but have you learned your legal self-defense? Do you know the law? Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for your legal self-defense class. Each class is tailored to the laws in your state. Attorney Andrew Branca will teach you the law. Not just what the law says, but what the judge's legal opinions say. What the jury instructions say. Sure, you could risk spending the rest of your life in prison because you followed the advice of some gun store counter jockey, or you could spend the day with the man who literally wrote the book on the law of self-defense. Carry a gun so you're hard to kill. Know the law so you're hard to convict. Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for a legal self-defense class in your state, and make sure to use discount code VARIETY at checkout to receive 10% off.
This week on The Bridge, Tiffany reminds us of Hanlon's razor. When dealing with Donald Trump, never attribute to malice that which is adequately explained by carelessness. Well, hey, Tiffany, what do you got this week?
Hey, Sean. So I couldn't wait to talk to you about this when I saw it on the news. You may have heard, but in case our audience has been enthralled in the Olympic competitions, a few days ago, Donald Trump said this.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know.
After which the entire universe promptly lost its Pro-Trump folks tied themselves in knots to justify those comments, and anti-Trump folks resorted to equally impressive sort of verbal gymnastics to condemn it. And that's exactly the kind of gaping gulf that begs to be bridged, of course. So I figured we could weigh in on it here with my modest little 2 cents. So here's what I think. To the anti-Trumpers out there, please stop saying that Donald Trump wants to assassinate Hillary Clinton or assassinate Supreme Court justices. That's a blatantly opportunistic resort to the kind of self-serving hyperbole that you always complain about hearing from Trump himself. I don't think that anyone with a modicum of intellectual honesty could really argue with a straight face that Trump was doing anything more than being flippant, playing to the crowd, or just making a joke, boorish and unseemly though that joke may have been. Now, to the pro-Trumpers out there, likewise, I would ask you guys to kindly please stop with the move along, nothing to see here spiel. It's really kind of self-degrading, if you ask me. Just as it's a little too over the top to interpret Trump's comment as a call for murder, I think it's also a little too under the bottom to expect people to believe that he was merely talking about voting, as many have argued on the internet and on TV. This is the line currently being towed by surrogates like Senator Jeff Sessions and former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani. While I commend their Herculean efforts to untangle their boss's ever-expanding wake of word salad, some things are just unspinnable. As many in the media have already pointed out, it's obvious that Trump was not talking about voting because no mere candidate who has yet to be voted into office has the power to appoint Supreme Court justices. So that just doesn't make sense to me. Nice try, but it doesn't make sense. Senator Susan Collins of Maine, I think, had a much more plausible explanation. She's not a Trump supporter, but give a listen to what she had to say on Trump's comments.
Do you believe that he was trying to incite violence there?
I've been very critical of Donald Trump, but I actually don't think that's what he was saying. I think he was suggesting that the Second Amendment advocates across the country might be able to come together to pressure the Senate to reject her nominee should she become president. That's how I interpreted it. But it is an example of Donald Trump's looseness with language that can lead to interpretations that, such as the one put out by Secretary Clinton's camp.
Kudos to Senator Collins for retaining a shred of dignity while defending Mr. Trump. Unlike Sessions and Giuliani, at least Collins did stop short of asking me to disbelieve my lying eyes, or my lying ears in this case. But there's one tiny problem I still have with Collins' explanation. Trump's comments didn't end with the whole maybe Second Amendment people can do something about it stuff. He did have one other thing to say, sort of added a final bit of punctuation after that.
Nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But I'll tell you what, that will be a horrible day.
So if Trump were really suggesting that pro-gun advocates could pressure the Senate into blocking anti-gun Supreme Court nominees, as Senator Collins suggested, then why would that be such a bad day? What's so horrible about a massive block of NRA members successfully wielding the political system to stop an adverse judicial appointment? Wouldn't that be a good day for the Second Amendment? So again, I just don't think that that explanation flies. In my humble opinion, it's yet another attempt to retroactively cleanse an off-color Trumpism, but it just falls flat. But again, I have to hasten to add that just as I said at the opening, that still doesn't give the Hillary camp the right to label Trump an assassin. That, my friends, I think is a bridge too far.
I took it to mean he was trying to say the same sort of things that Judge Alex Kaczynski said a whole lot better. He said that the Second Amendment is a doomsday provision. And so basically, if the government decides it's going to tear up the Constitution, if it's going to ignore the plain language written in the Second Amendment, that they've basically decided we're not going to follow the rules. And if they don't follow the rules, they're not a government anymore. They're just a mob trying to oppress people.
And I think that that makes sense, and it's very logical and well thought out and consistent with the writings and history of the Second Amendment. But I think to attribute that kind of thoughtfulness to Donald Trump is probably giving him a little more credit than he deserves. That putting those words into Trump's mouth would sort of assume that he has a kind of long-term foresight and nuanced thinking, strategic thoughtfulness that hasn't exactly been his claim to fame so far in this election season. So, you know, rather than explaining his comments away as a noble allusion to our forefathers or some sort of, hey, when the Constitution burns, break glass and press button provision, I have a hard time believing that Trump had actually given it that much thought. But kudos to you. It's another nice try. But here's the rub, though. I actually think both sides are kind of missing the point here. I think there's an altogether different reason why pro-gun advocates should decry Mr. Trump's comments. In my opinion, what he said actually demeans the gun community. Commentator S.E. Cupp talks about this in more detail in a piece that she wrote for CNN, but basically the long and short of it is this. As Senator Collins noted, and I happen to agree, Trump is famous for his quote-unquote looseness with language. And in this case, he has carelessly given anti-gunners that much more ammunition to brand all gun owners as violent, as trigger-happy, as, you know, these sort of premature kind of insurrectionists or anarchists, all eager to go to guns over every petty political or personal beef. I know that's not what he said, but that's definitely what they're extracting from what he said. And I doubt that that was his intention, since obviously he was in the midst of pandering to a bunch of pro-gun folks when he made those comments. So he wasn't trying to crap on the gun community, but that was the effect of his looseness with language, if you will. And I don't know if you saw this over the last few days, but the coverage on TV and online, as the coverage unfolded after he made those comments, you could just hear it in the voices of some of the more liberal-leaning commentators. Whether or not they actually uttered the words out loud, their remarks were often dripping with this undertone of, "See, I told you those gun nuts were freaking crazy." It was everywhere, and it just drove me insane. And I kept thinking to myself, why, Donald Trump, did you give them that leverage? So I know what a lot of people might be thinking. Oh, Trump's better on guns than Clinton could ever be on her best day. And that might be true. I'm not saying it isn't, but I'm just asking folks to keep in mind that gun policy isn't a zero-sum game. And even if Trump is better overall for Second Amendment folks than other candidates are, that doesn't mean we can afford to give him a pass when he drops the ball. And I think in this case, he did. So I've said it before, I'll say it again, words matter. Language matters, especially when it's coming from someone on the world stage. And especially when the Second Amendment is facing the kind of jeopardy that it faces. I don't think that we devolve into a dreaded danger zone of political correctness by simply demanding that our presidential candidates be capable of putting together a coherent sentence that at least attempts to make the plight of gun control advocates a little more difficult rather than playing into their hands. Is it our responsibility to coddle every left-leaning or agenda-driven pundit with a microphone? Of course not. That's not our job. But I do think it would be in our best interest to avoid making unforced errors that contradict all the best qualities that I personally love about the average gun owner.
All right, Tiffany, it was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
Thank you, Sean. I appreciate it. And until next time, I hope everybody will stay safe and, as always, keep it centered and even.
You can follow Tiffany at frontsightpress.com.
And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Erin Paulette.
Come on, every pony. It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Erin Paulette.
So last week, a friend of mine, and I actually mean a friend of mine, not this happened to me, and I'm saying it happened to a friend because I'm embarrassed, had his home broken into and his laptop, game console, and 5 firearms stolen. Fortunately, the thieves didn't get all of his guns. His prized 303 Enfield wasn't taken, along with some others that were overlooked. But now he has a broken front door, 2 empty gun closets, and a worry that someone will get hurt with his guns. So, here are my thoughts on how you can prepare against break-in and theft. Please bear in mind that some of these solutions are what I would consider expensive, but since you're securing the place where you sleep at night, and where you might end up writing out a disaster or emergency, these are funds well spent. Besides, improving your home is cheaper than building a bunker, and it adds value to your home in case you need to sell or refinance.
So it's blue collar in the sense that you're not spending $1 million on a bunker.
Absolutely. So, doors. Make sure that doors into your home are sturdy. Most house doors are, but I think most of us have seen the video of the methed out dude with machete kicking down a flimsy apartment door. So if you can, get an all steel or solid wood core door from your local hardware store. Next, you need to reinforce the hinges and door jamb. I recommend the StrikeMaster 2 door frame and hinge reinforcement kit, which you can get from Home Depot for around $80. They install easily. I did my front door in about an hour or so, and they have other options, such as for French double doors as well. If you have a door that opens outward, like say a back door, your hinges are outside as well, and you'll need to make sure they can't be removed. If you're lucky, your door will have non-removable pin hinges, but if not, you can replace them fairly easily. Another option are stud hinges, which are regular hinges but with a stud from one hinge plate that mates into a hole on the other plate, making it impossible to swing the door out even if the pin has been removed. And you can get either kind of hinge from Amazon or from your local hardware store. Or if you're handy, you can make stud hinges with just a drill and some extra screws. There's a link in the show notes. Get a good lock for your door, too. Don't rely on just a door latch. Get an actual deadbolt from a reputable company. And for goodness sake, don't get one of those locks that opens via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or your smartphone, because Baron will come to your home and slap you silly if you do. It's a massive security risk. And finally, if you have a door that you don't open often, or if you just want some extra security, get a dual function security bar. These work on both sliding and inward opening doors, and they only cost around $20. Windows. The big problem with windows is that they break easily, and you could put bars on them, but those are unattractive and could prevent you from escaping your home during a fire. Instead, I recommend that you get an impact-resistant security window film and apply it to the inside of your windows. Not only will this help distribute the force of something striking the glass, it will also help hold the window together if part of it breaks. And you can use this on sliding glass doors or just doors with windows as well. Rolls of the film are usually 30 or 36 inches wide and come in a variety of lengths, usually 6.5 and 12 feet. And finally, if you have a window that you don't open and use mainly just for light, such as a basement window, it might be worth replacing the window with glass bricks. These will let light in, but will keep intruders out. Now, if you have a garage door, there's always the chance that someone can find your frequency and use it to raise the door. And you have 2 very easy options in this case. 1, get a manual lock for your garage door that attaches to the rails. This way, even if the thief finds the frequency, they won't be getting the door open without bypassing the lock first. The drawback to this is that you have to remember to lock the door when you leave, and you'll have to get out of the car to unlock the door when you come back, and the garage door opener might break or burn out from straining against the lock if the thief keeps pressing the button. Your other option is to lock the door that leads from your garage to your house. And while this is much easier and much more convenient for you, it does leave the contents of your garage vulnerable to theft. So, like everything in life, this is a trade-off of security versus convenience. Now, alarms are great, but they are expensive to install and they require a monthly fee. I'm not really qualified to discuss the pros and cons of different alarm companies, so shop around and find the one that's right for you. If you do get one, though, you might as well just go all out and get one that not only monitors the doors and windows, but also has motion detectors inside the house. Dogs, if you have them, are also a great form of alarm and deterrent, so long as they have a bark that is either loud or imposing. If your dog sounds like he'll eat the face off of anyone trying to get in, that will discourage most burglars who are just going to find easier places to rob. And even if you have a small dog, if it's really loud and insistent, that also works well, especially if you have neighbors who are likely to hear the commotion and investigate or call the police. And finally, let's go back to my friend who now has empty gun closets. Clearly, if you have the space and the money to buy a gun safe, then by all means do so. But the cheapest I've ever seen is around $1,000. So if you want to secure your firearms against theft but can't afford a fireproof vault, you can get what's called a security cabinet for $200 to $500. While nowhere near as sturdy as a safe, obviously, an all-metal cabinet about the size of a wall locker ought to make the time required to get into it take longer than an average burglar would want to spend inside the house. Just make sure that you have it secured to the wall and the floor, or else a very strong and ambitious thief might just carry the whole thing out to open at his leisure. Now, as responsible gun owners, we all have records of our firearm serial numbers, right? Make sure you store that information in the same place you store your passport, birth certificate, etc., so that if they do get stolen, you can report them both to the police for recovery and for insurance purposes. Speaking of insurance, this is a point of contention for many gun owners. While guns are covered under homeowners' policies, there is a hard limit for how much you will get back. For example, my friend was only paid $2,500 for his lost guns, and he's still out of pocket on them. Now, it is possible to get your guns insured for a higher value, either separately or as a collection, and this will cover both theft and damage without depreciation, but there's a catch. You have to give your insurance agent the make, model, and serial number of all the guns you want to insure. I understand this can be a deal breaker for many people who don't like the idea of anyone, even an insurance company, knowing how many or what kind of guns they have. So it's a two-edged sword. You get more coverage, but in return, you lose some privacy. However, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that NRA membership comes with a free $2,500 insurance policy from Arms Care that insures against theft, loss, or damage. You do have to fill out a form and send it in to activate it, but it's free, and they don't ask you how many guns you have or what their serial numbers are. Of course, I need to stress that I am not an insurance agent. In fact, if there are insurance agents listening, please contact me using the Gunblog VarietyCast contact form and let me know if I'm right or if I've got something wrong. I'm always happy to be proven wrong if it means I learned something in the process. And be sure to indicate that you'd like more ponies in the podcast.
Yeah, my wife handled all the insurance stuff, and I'm pretty sure in our case, we just had to give them a dollar value for how much we wanted to insure. Because I know that my wife didn't go and get all the serial numbers and hand them off. But then, I'm not entirely certain how the insurance works in our house, so I'm not the best person to ask.
Not only can you subscribe or donate to the podcast, you can also make a contribution to the LGBT Training Ammo Fund. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the LGBT Training Ammo Fund donation button in the right sidebar. I'll use this money to pay for range fees, targets, and yes, ammo for the people I teach. And thanks for your support.
Hillary Clinton appeared on Fox News, and suddenly she's a huge supporter of the Second Amendment and the Heller decision. Weird puts her under the magnifying glass.
In this week in anti-gun nuttery. So hey, Weird, what do you got for me this week?
Hillary Clinton appeared on Fox News, of all places, with Chris Wallace, and he raised an interesting question.
At a fundraiser last year, you said this: the Supreme Court is wrong on the Second Amendment. Now, in the 2008 Heller case, the court said that there is a constitutional individual right to bear arms. What's wrong with that?
We've played this clip before, but let's get the full cut.
We're going to do whatever we can. I was proud when my husband took them out, and we were able to ban assault weapons, but he had to put a sunset on. So 10 years later, of course, you know, Bush wouldn't agree to reinstate them. We've got to go after this. And here again, the Supreme Court is wrong on the Second Amendment. And I am going to make that case every chance I get. So I will need your help on that.
She seems pretty clear to me. How does Hillary spin that?
I think what the court said about there being an individual right is in line with constitutional thinking. And I said in the convention, I'm not looking to repeal the Second Amendment. I'm not looking to take people's guns away. But I am looking for more support for the reasonable efforts that need to be undertaken to keep guns out of the wrong hands.
Well, except the court ruled that guns in common use couldn't be banned, and she was praising her husband's ban on some of the most prevalent firearms in private use. Further, one of her delegates, Massachusetts Attorney General Mara Healey, declared that the Clinton ban applied to all semi-auto long guns, possibly all semi-auto guns. Her little reinterpretation of the law indeed has opened the door to confiscation. Furthermore, thousands of people, such as myself, are a court order away from a felony conviction simply because we were following the law, and that conviction would strip my rights to own any guns. We're talking stupid and onerous laws that punish law-abiding citizens while doing nothing about violent crime.
And the Second Amendment includes an individual right to bear arms.
Yes, but that right, like every other of our rights, our First Amendment rights, every right that we have is open to and even subject to reasonable regulations.
This is essentially that fire in a crowded theater argument that we talked about way back in episode 12. By the way, I re-listened to it just to refresh my memory. I forgot how bad this show used to be. 100 repetitions will polish even the hardest stone. Antes claim that since you can't legally shout fire in a crowded theater when there is no fire, and therefore you're limiting free speech, essentially the Second Amendment can be limited in any way they feel fit. No. The limitations on rights we have all have to do with malicious or negligent use of those rights. Inciting a riot or committing an act of libel or slander are illegal uses of free speech or press. Same with murdering somebody or injuring someone with a negligent discharge are illegal uses of firearms. But what Mrs. Clinton is talking about is the Second Amendment version of prior restraint, creating victimless crimes involving firearms.
Are you saying you do not want to see the Heller decision, the individual right to bear arms, overturned?
No, I don't. But here's what I do want, and I want to be very clear about this. I want the Congress to step up and do its job. I want to get out of the horrible cycle we're in, where we go and mourn dozens, hundreds, thousands of people killed by gun violence. Everybody says, oh, let's pray, let's, you know, send our hearts and our feelings, and then nothing happens. We're better than this.
If she doesn't want Heller overturned, what did they get wrong? She got caught in a lie, and it didn't even faze her. As for the cycle of gun control, what she forgets to mention is the pure insanity the anti-gun side offers in the wake of a tragedy. Background check laws in the wake of crimes where the killer passed a background check. Terror watch list laws for terrorist attacks perpetrated by persons not on the terror watch list. Bans of firearms not used in crime as crime prevention bills. Sadly, you're not better than this, Ms. Clinton. You're far, far worse.
All right, Weird. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's W-E-E-R-D world.com.
Just that woman. I have nothing intelligent to add. Just, God, you cannot force me to listen to her talk.
Plug of the week. Passage Foods Street Kitchen North Indian Butter Chicken.
That's a mouthful. Is it as tasty as it sounds?
Oh, my goodness. Right. So thank you, Walmart. My wife's wandering through the Walmart and she sees, you ever seen the stir fry packages? There's just this little packet. You mix a bunch of stuff in with the little flavor packet and then you stir fry your food in it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, take that to like the top. Actual sauce, actual spices and spice packs, and instructions on turning your random pieces of chicken into actual Indian food. Oh my goodness, right? I'm like, well, you know, my wife bought these things. Yeah, you know, maybe they'll be all right. But I mean, how could it be good, right? 40 minutes start to finish, and that includes prepping the rice, prepping all stuff, and probably piddling about in the kitchen. It says actually 20 minutes, but she spent 40 minutes, and on the table went actual Indian butter chicken. It was fantastic. I just can't believe that something like that came out of a flavor packet, which is, you know, got a lot of sauce and stuff in it, but still, it's like a random flavor packet in Walmart. So check it out, Passage Foods. It'll say Street Kitchen in big letters. And the flavor that we tried was North Indian butter chicken, but my wife assures me that we've got about half a dozen more to try.
So just to confirm, you have to add your own meat.
Yes, it does not come with meat.
Okay, good to know.
Well, that's our show for the week.
Find the show notes at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode104.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast. Music courtesy of Rob Allen at blog.roballen.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music. This podcast is made possible by the Firearms Policy Coalition and by contributions from listeners like you.
Get an all-steel or solid wood core door from your local apartment store.
Hardware store.
That's what I said.
You said apartment store. So start from get an all-steel.
I take your word for it. So if you can, get an all-steel or solid wood core door from your local hardware store.
This is a URS production.